It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Live Mike. I'm Lee Lonsberry. This morning, the day started, if you were following the news, with a memorial service for the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was memorialized by those who worked with her, knew her, worshipped with her. She, as she made her way across the street to the U.S. Capitol there, gathered outside, the Supreme Court gathered outside, were all of her, maybe not all, but many of the former clerks who have worked with her, who had worked with her over her 27 years as a member of the Supreme Court, and even clerking for her in past positions. It is it's a somber day, certainly, and it's a somber time and era as we, regardless of your politics, look back at the trails that were blazed by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, by the interestingly the pop culture icon that she became. You don't think of a little lady like her on the Supreme Court becoming the image that you would see on young people T-shirts, the notorious RBG. A fascinating life she lived, but now she is gone, and there is a vacancy left by her death, and that vacancy must be filled. Now, the timing of all of this, when the news first broke last Friday, I will admit, unfortunately, that I, instead of looking back at her legacy and mourning, my mind went immediately to, what exactly happens next, and when is it going to happen? Boyd Matheson, he corrected my mentality and got me back down here to earth so that I was looking back on history. But now we are nearly a week removed, and it is certainly the time to be looking at what comes next. And we look to the various senators who bear the responsibility to advise and consent on federal nominations like this to the Supreme Court. Senator Lee put out a statement just the other day making it known that, he said this. He said, in 2016, President Obama nominated a replacement for Justice Scalia, and my Senate colleagues and I gave our advice and consent on the nominee, consistent with the Constitution, by rejecting him. This year, President Trump will nominate a replacement for Justice Ginsburg, and consistent with the Constitution, we will again give our advice and consent. If we like the nominee, we will confirm her. If we don't, we won't. It's that simple. Joining me on the line now is Mike Lee, who himself has appeared on a list of potential candidates for nomination by President Trump. The president has made it known now, though, that he intends to nominate a woman, so it's not likely that Mike Lee will be receiving the nomination on Saturday, but he joins us now to discuss his reaction to this vacancy. Senator, how are you?
Doing great. Thank you very much, Lee.
Could you do me a favor? As we start this conversation, would you walk through for me in greater detail the similarities you see between 2016 and today in that your intention to investigate this nominee and to offer your advice and consent was similar to the advice and consent you gave in 2016. There are some who they're using the word hypocrisy in that there were no hearings. There was not an opportunity for the nominee then to make their case. That's different from, it seems, the intentions and the decisions of today.
Sure. I'm happy to answer that. The short answer is this is an exercise of political discretion. Some would even say raw political power, but it's influenced from moment to moment based on who's in the White House and who's got the majority in the Senate. But there really is a fairly familiar pattern, and this is consistent with that. Look, in the history of our republic, a Supreme Court vacancy has arisen during an election year 29 times. 10 of those times occurred when the presidency was held by one party and the Senate majority by another party. In 9 of those 10 cases, the nominees were rejected by the Senate. just like Merrick Garland was rejected in 2016. On the other hand, there have been 19 times when the Supreme Court seat became vacant in an election year where both the presidency and the Senate were controlled by the same party. Only one of those 19 nominees, Abe Fortas, was rejected. And he was rejected on a bipartisan basis after a scandal in which he became embroiled. Every other nominee in that group, 18 out of 19, was confirmed in an election year when the Senate and the president were in the same party. And so that's why the consistent standard that's been followed quite consistently is that when the Senate and the White House are politically aligned, it goes through. When they're not, it doesn't.
And so the decision to not hear, to not have a committee hearings,
yeah,
or any consideration in 2016 is equivalent to the way that you would express your advice and consent in this year, that declining to hear was an expression of advice and consent.
Yes, exactly. In other words, it's a binary switch. Confirmation is a binary switch. You either confirm or you don't confirm. Constitutionally speaking, that's all that matters. Unless or until the nominee is confirmed, the nominee is not confirmed. We chose in 2016 not to hold hearings, in part because it would have been a waste of time. It would have been inconsiderate of Judge Garland. It would have been inconsiderate of our colleagues. We had already made a decision that we were not going to confirm him. Now, sure, we could have gone one way or the other. We could have held hearings. By the way, it's important to note that there is nothing in the Constitution, there is nothing in statute that requires us to have hearings. We tend to do so if we're thinking about possibly confirming, just to make sure that we know the nominee. But it is equally acceptable from a constitutional standpoint to decide not to hold hearings at all and not to hold a vote at all if you don't want to confirm. That's the decision that was made by the Republican majority in 2016. And it's a different decision this year, understandably, predictably, and consistent with modern historical practice, for the simple reason that the Senate and the presidency are controlled by the same parties.
There is seemingly a short list of three women who may be announced on Saturday by President Trump as his nominee. By all indications, that individual will see time before the United States Senate and the Judiciary Committee before that. Do you predict that the experience of that nominee will be a pleasant one based on what we saw last go around?
Yes. Now, look, I think that this will be a contentious nomination. I also think that the nomination will, in the end, be successful, that we will confirm the nominee. I also predict that it's likely to be Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who currently serves on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit in Indiana. We confirmed her just shy of 3 years ago to that position. She's a former law clerk of Justice Scalia's. She's a former law professor. She's a staunch advocate of textualism and originalism, and the idea that her job as a judge is to interpret the law based on what it says rather than based on what she wishes it said. She's a judge cut out of the mold of Antonin Scalia, Sam Alito, and Clarence Thomas, which is exactly what we want.
You will have an opportunity to question her should she be the nominee. What will you ask?
You know, I'm going to ask her a number of questions. I'll likely explore her interpretation of things like the Commerce Clause. I'd like to hear some of her thoughts on separation of powers issues, on the extent to which Congress over the years has deferred its lawmaking power to unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats. The courts have facilitated that by being really deferential to unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats in their lawmaking capacity. These are the kinds of questions I like to ask about it, in addition to the block and tackle, meat and potatoes sort of stuff that consists of Fourth Amendment analysis, searches and seizures, domestic surveillance of government citizen, of U.S. citizens by the federal government, things like that.
I should ask you this ahead of time. We only have about 30 seconds left, but what leads you to believe that Amy Coney Barrett may be the front runner and the likely nominee?
You know, I'm not certain that that's the case, and the president hasn't told anyone. I nonetheless reached that conclusion just based on the fact that every time I've seen him speak about her, he does so quite favorably. And based on the fact that of the individuals who are under active consideration right now, she seems to be the most logical choice for him, and I support that.
Understood. Senator Mike Lee, thank you for your time and your views on this. We'll speak again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks so much, Lee.
All righty, quick break. When we return, I want to share with you some funny business going on at the FDA. It turns out that that federal organization may be prolonging the vaccine approval process, but not in the name of science. We'll get into why next on Live Mike. I'm Lee Lonsberry, and this is KSL News Radio.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.